girls, it's Lindsay, and welcome to Behind the Screams. Today we're talking about the 1988 cult classic Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. And as always, I'm joined by my lovely pals, Ian and Lucy. How are you both?
All right. I was wondering if Lucy was going to go first there.
I was going to say, you sounded a wee bit unsure. Are you sure you're all right?
You can.
I've got some stuff I need to talk about.
All right, so. Hold the bus, we'll get there. How are you, Lucy?
Good, thank you. And I was going to start off, as always, with a pun. And I'm going to quote the famous queen herself. Now, you can call me Lucy. No.
She's fucked it up already.
No. My name's Lucy, but you can call me tonight.
Hey.
There you go. I got there in the end.
We could do like a million of these for this episode, right?
I know.
Yeah.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
Lucy's right off her stot now. Right. She's just.
I don't know how to human now.
She's completely lost the plot. Lindsay, take over quick. Well. Take over quick.
So you're used to hearing our lovely voices every single week, but we're also all over the internet. Ian, where can people find you online?
You can find my personal Twitter profile at IanForrest12 with two R's. I actually posted a tweet this week that wasn't podcast or stream related.
Oh my god. Were you feeling all right?
No.
It was skinny.
About it was about my Grey's Anatomy mug.
Oh. I've never seen Grey's Anatomy, but surprisingly, like, I think it's associated with being like a proper emotional show. Like, I know so many guys who love that programme and they like specifically watch it to have a wee greet.
I don't love it. Carrie made me watch it and I did become like a bit obsessed with it, but you become obsessed with it not because it's good.
All right, okay.
Just clarifying.
Lucy, where can people find you on the internet?
I have much better puns online, I promise.
Look, you try to save your reputation.
It's okay, gone. It's in the toilet. No, it's done. It's over.
If you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter and Twitch at lulu_pew. And I'd also encourage you as well, there's a little project that I'm getting involved in called Hear Us Scream, The Voices of Horror. I can't say much else about it other than it's a group of fucking amazing women and non-binary horror content creators, and there's some exciting stuff coming in the next few weeks, so please also check that out.
I am on all social media at Hi It's Lindsay, speaking endless amounts of nonsense about many, many things and probably getting angry about something political. So if that sounds like your kind of thing, give me a follow. Behind the Screams is also all over the internet. We are at Screams Behind on Twitter. We're at Behind the Screams Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. We're on TikTok at Behind the Screams Podcast. And we are on Twitch. Ian, when are we on Twitch?
I don't fucking know anymore. It keeps changing. Normally, we're doing Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sunday evenings, but I've been doing quite a few daytime afternoon streams this week, and we've been getting pretty good responses to them as well. So just stay tuned to our Twitter, because it'll always be posted up on there. But yeah.
Or just... follow and you'll get a wee notification on your phone every time we go live.
That's so, true. That's how you ended up in one of my streams this week.
Yes, I dropped by on one of the afternoon streams because Ian was playing a game that I like and
it
was only me working. So
failing terribly at, by the way. It was Crash Bandicoot for those who don't know. And
it was good fun. I was also getting scared by all the jump scares because I was sitting working and in their scream would just pop out my phone.
Fucking Dave, man.
Have you heard the cackle sound alert yet? Because it's
no,
so good.
I haven't.
You need to hear it, Lindsay. It's perfection.
Oh Okay, I'll try and I'll pop by in another stream another time and hopefully I'll get to hear it. And we are also on Patreon, so if you really like the content you've been listening to, you can subscribe at the £1 and the £5 tier. You get early access on both. On the £1 tier, you get audio, and on the £5 tier, you get the audio and the video version. So, what's a bang for your buck there?
And now you can see me in much better definition.
Yeah, he's got a new camera, and you can actually see him. He's not got that bloody Vaseline on the lens look.
Listen, it was doing wonders for me.
Don't be silly.
Okay.
So today we're talking about Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. How are we feeling about it? Are we excited?
I'm ready. My body is ready. My mind is ready.
My
Let's
body
do it.
Is so up for this.
It's gonna be good. It's gonna be a good discussion. Just before we get into the movie discussion, I'm gonna hijack a little bit here because I have a couple of things. One thing majorly that I kind of want to get off my chest, and I know I haven't really told you guys the specifics of it today, but we got, and I always say, right, if you're podcasting and you're not pissing anyone off, you're not podcasting properly. Someone is always going to be upset. But we got our first real, because we've had like one average review on Apple Podcasts throughout the vast amounts of 5-star reviews that we've got, but we got our first like negative review today. Well, we got it on the 28th, but I only spotted it today because it's on Apple Podcasts Canada, and funnily enough, I don't go on to Apple Podcasts Canada a lot, but it popped up in my charitable today. So I would we've also gotten a couple of very positive reviews in the last couple of days, which I'll read out afterwards. But normally, you know, I understand that podcasts are not necessarily for everyone, and not every podcast is going to be for everyone. And for me, if I listen to a podcast and I don't really like it, or it's not really my thing, or I find something wrong with it, I tend to just not listen again and move on to the next podcast. But this person felt so strongly that they needed to leave us a little review. And the reason, and I am dragging here for time, and I'm doing it on purpose, because this person was complaining that there was too much chit-chat at the beginning of our shows. There's too much of it. There's just too much of it, right? So what I'm going to do is first, I'm going to read out this review, right? So, I was excited to listen to their Eden Lake episode, but after 15 minutes, I shut it off. There was way too much chatter and high-pitched laughter. Point. Sound quality was pretty bad and it was hard to understand. Worst thing was how long it took to get to the topic. By then, I was mentally checked out. Here's the kicker. 2 stars. Still not bad enough to be a 1-star. So, the points that I have, right? I double-checked back on that episode because I know sometimes we do go quite a length of time in our sort of intros and things like that. 7 minutes and 53 seconds of intro in that episode. So for me, in an hour and 50-minute long podcast, I don't think that 7.5 minutes to 8 minutes is really that long a time. And we have to get our social media plugs in, and we have to do the housekeeping at the start of every episode. We just have to, because not everyone listens to the very last second of an episode for us to get all those things in. The second thing that bugged me, actually, going back to the time thing, we also put timestamps in the description for every single episode we release. So if you go and look at the description of our episode, because there are some people who maybe don't want to listen to this stuff at the beginning, maybe have listened to all 100 and however many episodes we've done now and think, you know what? I know you're on Twitter. I don't want to fucking hear that shit again. So we put timestamps and we say, like, if you want to just skip to the movie discussion, skip forward to this time. So that's always in the description to each episode. The thing that bugged me is, right, and I know for a fact, this, in terms of, like, audio quality, we are not the best podcast in the world. I know for that for a fact. But we are, by far and away, have very decent audio quality. I listen to a number of episodes. I listen to all the episodes back. You know, I don't want to start bragging about the podcast, but we've been downloaded in 64 different countries now around the world. We have coming up for 15,000 downloads, and it's like, I don't think we would have achieved that if our sound quality was so bad. So what really bothered me was it was hard to understand, because that leads me to think that they just couldn't understand the fact that they were Scottish and just didn't understand us. So in actual fact, I don't know how intentional that is, but it just felt a little bit xenophobic. Fuck that guy, pretty much. I just really wanted to say that, said fuck that guy, because so now I'm dragging this intro out as long as I physically can, because this is our fucking podcast, and we can go as long as we want for these intros. We could go another hour just doing chit chat. Just doing chit chat. But in actual fact, though, we make a relatively conscious effort to try and keep that chit chat at the beginning to 10 minutes or less. And especially if you're doing like an hour and a half long podcast, I think that's relatively reasonable. And people have the right to skip that. That's absolutely within people's right. And, you know, we're not above criticism, but telling us that you couldn't understand us, and because of the way we laugh, we can't do anything with that information. And I've always been taught to, or you know, I always sort of live myself, try and live my life as in, you don't criticize people for things that they have no control over. And so, I just kind of wanted to call it out a little bit. I don't know how, like, because it's not a nice thing, and I'm sure, you know, I'm sure it's the same thing for you. Like, people need to realize that the words they say really do have an impact on people. Like, you know, we work our fucking arse off on this podcast, and I make this claim, and I make it, even though I don't know for certain, I make it knowing it's pretty close to true. We are the hardest working podcast in horror Twitter, because we work at this show every single day to make it the most interactive show it can be. You know, our social media presence, I think, is second to none. You know, and the fact of we are available on pretty much every single social media platform, we are available on our social media platforms 24, pretty much 24 hours a day between all of us. You know, so it really irks me when people come and say, oh yeah, but I can't understand what you're saying, so you're a two-star podcast. No, get fucked. So, with that being said, I would now like to finish on a positive note and read out the two very great reviews that we had. First one was from the Weekly World News. It says, 5 stars. I only just discovered this show in March 2021, and I'm so glad I did. Love the insights, questions, and banter. Y'all have a great show, and I'm looking forward to hearing more. And then Sophie F 1991, also 5 stars. The hosts are so well informed and hilarious. If you love horror, great discussion, and just an all round good time, this is the podcast for you. So we really appreciate those really nice words. But yeah, fuck you, that guy who gave us a 2-star review and your shitty fucking review. I can't help it that you don't understand this.
I don't know why, just to take it on a light note, when you did that, I thought you were gonna be like, I don't think you're ready for this jelly.
No one's ready for this jelly. But no, I know, you know, people don't really want to hear rants and gripes and things like that, but that really sort of bugged me, you know, specifically those two things. You know, I understand that this podcast isn't for everyone, and you know, not every podcast can be for everyone, but to criticize us for things that we have absolutely no control over, fuck you. Fuck you. Honestly. I hope your ears fall off. You can never listen to a podcast again. Is that harsh? Is that too harsh?
That's how you feel. That's how you feel.
Yeah. I'm done now.
Preach, sis.
We can move on.
Okay.
So yeah, so you that person was complaining about 7 minutes and 53 seconds. Ha, well, here's a 14-minute intro for you, dick.
So are we ready to talk about it now?
I've been ready for the last 14 minutes.
Shady lady.
Let's go.
I've been ready from the start. I'm ready to go.
You're born ready, bitch.
Yes.
Wanna talk tough movies? Here's a superhero with the biggest pair of all.
You looking for me?
There she was, just walking down the street singing.
This Elvira is a slimy, slithering succubus, a concubine, a streetwalker, a tramp.
Yes, she's got it all. She's everything you've ever wanted in a movie. A woman and a casserole.
She was walking next to me.
You'll see lots of weird romance.
What's that perfume you're wearing?
Super unleaded. Don't smoke.
Loads of drooling madness.
Ew, I hope you change the sheets.
Hey, Elvira, we got us a couple more volunteers.
Great, just grab a tool and start banging.
A whole gang of awesome monsters.
I'm bad, Jamal, you know it.
And a few sleazy experiments.
There's nothing wrong with G-rated movies, as long as there's lots of sex and violence.
The charge is witchcraft.
We ought to have one of these every year.
See Elvira as Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
But if they ever ask about me, tell them I was more than just a great set of...
It's the greatest double feature of all time.
So, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark was released in 1988. It was directed by James Signorelli, and it stars and was co-written by Cassandra Peterson, and also stars Edie McClurg and Pat Crawford Brown. The IMDb plot is as follows. Upon arriving in a small town where she has inherited a rundown mansion, a famous horror hostess battles an evil uncle and townspeople who want her burned at the stake. So, Ian, this was your first time watching it.
It was, and I saved it for like 5 hours ago. So it's like fresh, it's fresh in my memory. I fucking loved it.
I'm glad.
You know how, like, you watch sometimes a movie, or not even just a movie, just anything that's, like, funny, but you never at any point laugh out loud while you're watching it, but you still think, oh, that's funny, but yeah. I laughed out loud at several points of this, so. I'll tell you when it happened. I'll tell you when we get to the discussion where I laughed out loud.
Lucy, how did you first come across this film?
I came across Elvira probably when I was in, like, my teen years, not younger than that, because I think he watched it probably a bit younger than I had, but it was just in that era of, I think around the same time I'd also watched like Heathers and Death Becomes Her and all these kind of just camp movies, and spoiler alert, I fucking love Elvira. It's the epitome of camp, Halloween, just every, it's just a feel good movie. I think we talked about comfort movies before. This is like a comfort movie, isn't it? It's just, oh, it's so
funny because Death Become Her was one of, when I was growing up, was one of my comfort movies because I fucking adore that movie so much.
See, like, like Lucy alluded to there, like, I've watched this film like since I was a kid. We had it on VHS, and I do remember my mum, I'm like, what's that? And my mum's like, oh, you're a bit young to watch that. And I'm not quite sure why, because I don't think there's anything like particularly gratuitous in this, but I still watched it as a child, just maybe not as like 6 years old when I wanted to, but like this and Death Becomes Her and like Interview with a Vampire, like I had those films on repeat as a child so much, so I proper love all of those. But yeah, this is a film that's like very well remembered among like me and my siblings as well. Like I was actually just on the phone with my sister not long ago, and me and my sister have terrible memories. Like, we'll both be like, oh yeah, barely remember any of our childhood. But like this and The Grinch, we know everything about it because it was on like all the bloody time. So I'm like super familiar with this film. I was so excited to get to talk about it. So yeah, let's dive in. So at the start of this film, I couldn't help but think actually, we very well could have done this in our like Women in Horror Month when we were talking about like all the shit that women have to put up with, because Elvira is treated so fucking poorly at this TV studio. It's disgusting what she has to put up with, but she deals with it like it's just not a bother, like it's just another day. She's so quick-witted and she just deals with it. Like, what did you guys think at this point?
I think people might think, watching this film, that it's being really over the top about it, you know, especially like at the beginning when you get like the lecherous station owner who comes out and he just grabs her by the tits, by the way. Like, he's only just met this lass and he's fucking molesting her. But I don't really think, if you actually think about real life, I don't actually think it's that over the top compared to what real life is actually like for a lot of women. Like,
well, like, we hear about the casting couch and then you think about all the Harvey Weinstein stuff. It's just like how many poor and young women were probably coerced into some form of sexual act for a job. I've even been asked before, like, oh, would you have sex for a job? And I was like, no, that's really gross. And then it's always a guy and they're like, oh, what's the problem with it? And it's like, they don't understand the difference in the power dynamic.
Yeah. I think as well is, you know, I think there's quite a few times the sort of more villainous characters, shall we call them, in this movie, you know, they slut shame and they, you know, they say that everything that happens to Elvira, she kind of brings on herself because of the way she acts. But people, it's just victim blaming, ultimately. You know, this woman is being molested, she's, you know, people unwanted advances. And they're blaming it on the fact of how she looks and what she says and how, and you know, and how she acts. And none of those things are an excuse for anyone to lay their fucking hands on her. You can act and say and do whatever you want, providing that you're not harming people. That doesn't mean that's an invitation to be molested. Stop victim blaming and teach your fucking men to stop molesting women.
Exactly. What do you think, Lucy?
I'm in complete agreement with both of you. And I don't think, like, even, I think when you first look at it, you know, when one of the guys at the TV station literally does grab her by the tits, you're like, oh my God. But really, that does happen. And I was doing a little bit of research and, you know, Cassandra Peterson had her show before this, her movie Macabre, which is kind of based on this. She said that this kind of happened to her in the past. It's not something that was unusual for her. You know, she's been sexualized since she was, I think she started doing like go-go dancing and stuff like underage as well, and like from like 14-15, like her whole life she's been sexualized. And when you think about it, this happens every day. And I think I'm not the only one in saying that I have been grabbed by that, like that before. I've been grabbed like that in a club before. I've been grabbed like that in broad daylight. Unfortunately, it's fucking disgusting. But I do love the way she claps back at men in this movie. It is so satisfying.
It's one of the things why she's like, because this movie, and I think intentionally as well, because Cassandra Peterson, as we know, or Elvira, she's an incredibly switched on, smart, intelligent woman. Like, that's probably her strongest asset, really, if you was to say, like, you know, she's so switched on, she's so smart to everything that goes on around her, that this movie is actually way ahead of its time because of the social commentary it's doing on these sorts of issues, like the way women are treated in the workplace, like the way women are treated in public, like the way women are sexualized and things like that. Actually, way, way ahead of its time. Light years, you know, ahead of its time. And I think that's something that really does need to be applauded with this movie. Obviously, it's still an incredibly funny movie, and we'll get into why it's funny, you know, and we'll get into like the more lighthearted stuff, because we're starting this off dead serious. But it's important, I think, because a lot of people might look at this and just think, oh, it's just a comedy movie or blah blah blah. No, this actually has a really, really deep and important message in there.
And I think particularly like during this whole like opening scene at the TV studio, and then obviously Elvira learns about her great aunt Morgana and goes to Falwell, and then her entrance there like really hits that kind of theme home of like, it's okay to be different, and like how important it is to be yourself and express yourself, because this town that she eventually goes to is so fucking repressed and conservative, and just the mere sight of Elvira, like, at some points later on in the film, like, makes women faint. And I think what's really interesting about this film is that Elvira comes in and everybody thinks, like, oh, Elvira's the problem, she's doing all these things in this time. But even from the very beginning, like, she takes her car to the garage and the guy, like, behind her back goes, nice tits, you know. And then a little bit later on, you get the lecherous agent. And it's just like, these things were always there.
Mm-hmm.
And you blame it on Elvira, and it's just like, these, like, lewd, like, bad behaviours have always been there, but through your system of repression, you're making people bury it deep, deep down, and that never plays well for anybody, no. Whether it's, like, no. sexual repression or, like, repression of, like, mental health problems, things like that. Like, these things always come back to bite you,
mm-hmm.
and they come out in a really bad way sometimes. So it's better just to give people the freedom and expression to be themselves, which is exactly what Elvira's like. And Elvira's like the nicest person there. Like, she's nice to everybody that she meets. She'll help people, you know, she really wants to help Bob with his business. And it's just like, you know, yous are the bad guys, not Elvira, but they're so in their own head that they're like, oh, this devil woman's going to ruin us all. And it's just like, actually, yous are all bad to begin with.
Yeah. I think what this movie also says, it's really important for women to stick up for each other as well. Because yes. a lot of the mm-hmm. people in this, you know, this, you know, it's very, very different the way the sort of two sexes treat Elvira. Both are pretty terrible. But obviously the men is, it's so sexualized and it's lecherous and, you know, they're making advances and, you know, molesting her. I mean, we're not so beating about the bush. They're molesting her. How many times in this movie does she get grabbed in an inappropriate place? Whereas the women are really, like, the men are horrendous. The women are so nasty. Like, they slut shame, they victim blame, you know, and, you know, the women should be sticking up for her.
Exactly. What do you think, Lucy?
I was gonna say, you know, even though this movie was made in 1988, the social commentary that we're having on it is still prevalent today. I think if you put somebody like Elvira in a small middle class town in the States or the UK or anywhere in Western society, you would kind of get the same reactions, to be honest, because so much of the world is still so repressed, like, sexually, politically, regarding mental health and things like that. And like you say, like, I just want to be Elvira's friend. Above everything else, Elvira is a great friend to everybody that she meets. You know, she is kind, she is welcoming, she never judges anyone else, and she's so unapologetically herself. And I think we had this conversation with the Addams Family as well. I think this is a great movie for kids as well, because it shows that if you're a kind person and you be yourself, fuck everyone else. As long as you can be true to yourself, you'll find your tribe and you'll find the people that are there for you, and be like, just be yourself, because karma's a bitch and it will get to people. And, well, yeah, that's my rant
on
that.
And like you said earlier as well, Lucy, like, she's so incredibly funny and quick-witted when she's, you know, snapping back at these people. You know, she has so many good one-liners and just little quips and things like that as well. So, you know, she really is a character that just shows off all the best qualities that a person can really have.
Exactly, because she is obviously sexualized in this movie, and she uses her sexuality to her advantage, but Elvira is so much more than her looks. And this movie shows that as well, because, like you say, she's hilarious as hell. She's also very, you know, very smart and mm-hmm. business savvy. And
I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why Elvira is puts herself in like this movie, and, you know, with obviously like her attire and things, is to show, you know what, like, yeah, I might be this, and as in like the body, but that's not how I'm going to be defined. I want to, like, she wants to dress like this, great, like, people can dress however the fuck they want, and that doesn't define who they are as a character or as a person.
What I kind of like about Elvira, like the character, and I think she does it really well in this film, is, and it's something that Dolly Parton has done throughout her career as well, is that like Dolly Parton will make the boob joke before someone else can do it for her.
It takes, like, the sting out of it, doesn't it?
Exactly. Like, Dolly Parton's been doing third wave feminism before third wave feminism was even a thing. Like, I don't think people understand, like, how much shit Dolly Parton used to get from her contemporaries for dressing the way she does. But she stuck by it throughout her whole career. And it's made, like, some people refer to her as, like, the great unifier, because her brand, Dolly Parton as a brand, is one of the most universally liked brands in America. And Elvira's kind of like that for horror. Like, she makes a joke about herself before you can do it. And even in the 80s, if you think about where feminism was in the 80s, a lot of it was about, like, women almost kind of like dressing like men to be taken seriously in the boardroom. Whereas you get this character created in the 80s that is, you know, boobs out, hyper, hyper sexy, but very smart, very funny. So yeah, she reminds me a lot of Dolly Parton, and I love that we kind of have a horror Dolly Parton.
I'd watch a horror movie that had Dolly Parton in it.
Me too. I'd watch anything with Dolly Parton in it. That's true. Love that woman.
We stan.
We definitely do. So we've arrived in Falwell, and then Robin tells her that it's the bowling alley is where it's at, and we meet Elvira's love interest in the film, Bob. What do we think of Bob?
Doesn't float my boat.
Doesn't tickle your pickle.
No, not for any reason other than he's just from this town, really. I'm not as good as Elvira, I judge.
What do you think, Lucy?
He's not my cup of tea. Like,
he's just a man. Aesthetic.
I mean, yeah. But, like, at first, when you watch it, I don't want to like him, but then you do like him because, like, you know, I think what I really like about this is, like, usually, especially in the movie of this era as well, it's a guy that has a girl as arm candy, whereas Bob is Elvira's arm candy. And I love that juxtaposition there. You know, he's not got the most depth, but I think, like, turning that stereotype around, because that's what would happen, I think, if it was the other way around.
I think as well.
He's like her, like, himbo boyfriend.
He's a himbo
boyfriend.
I think as well, like, even when you've got, like, a strong female lead in a movie, the temptation is often to have someone white knighting her.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really do that here. Like, especially like in the big sort of final confrontation, he gets kind of put out of the way relatively early doors, and it's just left to Elvira. And I do like that. I like the fact that, you know, it's not just your classic old damsel in distress, let's let Bob come and save the day sort of thing. Elvira does it herself.
She's exactly. Definitely the dominant one there. And that's what I like about it. He's kind of, a himbo is the best way to describe it. He's just kind of go with the flow. He really likes her. He's not, like, completely enamored with her, where he's, like, fallen on the ground, but he's not also, like, he's not being a fuckboy. He's not sexualizing her too much. I liked it.
Yeah, because, like, obviously we have Jeff Conway's character, Kinnicky, from Grease. He's, like, fucking grabbing her and stuff. And, like, Bob's a big guy. Bob's a big, like, a good-looking guy as well. Like, obviously, he's got interest from the town, and he very well could have done the same thing, but he's clearly a lot more respectful than that. So I like that about him.
Boy, does it make Patty jealous.
I was just about to say, We also meet Elvira's love rival, Patty. What do you think about Patty?
I feel like Patty is one of those homeschool, like, somebody that stays in your hometown that tries to sell you on a pyramid scheme on Facebook.
She is definitely Facebook messaging you, hey honey, I want my diet juice. Like, No thanks, yeah. Games used to bully me at school.
Waiting for your latest Avon order.
I'll give you it in pennies, you cow.
In coppers.
I thought you said poppers. What are you paying Avon? What are you paying for Avon with poppers for? It's that bloody sound quality. That guy was right.
But straight away in this, like we kind of alluded to before, like Patty goes, class doesn't compete with trash. She thinks she's better than Elvira, you know. For no reason in particular, because like Elvira just dresses differently to her, and then as we later find out in the film, she's wearing fake boobs because obviously she's insecure. She must be insecure about her small ones, and it's just like how is that really any different from Elvira? Like I'm always like flaunt what your mama gave you, like.
If someone is insecure about a body type and you want to have bigger boobs or you want to have smaller something or smaller this or bigger that, go and do it. Like, do what you want. Like, go and pad your bras and you know, pad your hips or you know, do whatever you fucking want. But don't then I can't even think of the word I'm trying to say. Don't then pass on that shitty downplay, like. The fact that Elvira wants to have her, like, has the tits to have them out and have a bit of cleavage. Like, that's not Elvira's fault. It's not your fault. Just fucking let her be and go do what you want.
Also, all boobies are nice boobies, so...
Yes, that's very true. Yeah. All bodies are beautiful. But I think it shows as well, I think we can all see this in real life, that the most insecure people are the ones that do that and they judge others because they wish they could put themselves out there. And they're projecting their self-image hate onto others because, you know, at the start, especially Elvira doesn't shame anyone for how they look. She doesn't go up to her and, you know, say anything. I think she makes snapbacks when she gets the fucking tar and chicken feathers thrown over her, but only then does she make like comments. Before that, she never does. It's always other people that start it. And I think that speaks volumes, really.
Very true. So after the bowling alley scene, we finally get to the will reading. And Elvira gets the house, a dog, and a recipe book. Which I think is alright. I'd like a free house.
That fucking house was massive, I know.
I know! No? But this is also where we meet Great Uncle Vincent. And Great Uncle Vincent's fucking raging.
They wonder. Like, they wonder though. Like, you think you're.
I loved that Morgana was like, and Vincent gets the rest, which is nothing. It's like, drag him from the grave, sis.
That's gonna be you, isn't it? You're gonna do that to somebody on your deathbed.
Maybe. We'll see.
I love the way they showed that as well. It's like the old TV show competition thing, and they're like, and you get this, and you get that. It's just so campy. I love it.
Oh, the dream sequence.
Yeah, which is like, you get so a sailboat funny. And a jeep and a dining room table.
So yeah, we find out what Elvira gets, and then she's shown around the house by the solicitor. She gives the wee dog a makeover. How fucking cool does Gonk look, by the way?
His little mohawk.
I know. I was just thinking today when I was rewatching it, I'm like, Bear's lucky he's a short-haired dog.
I Ripley wouldn't have it.
No, I wouldn't try it on a cat, definitely not.
We tried to put a bow tie collar on her once. Oof. I'm still recovering.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What did you think of Gonk's makeover? Lucy.
Oh, I was here for it. 10 out of 10. Category is punk realness, slay the house down boots. My listeners don't know, but my mum has a little dog. Doesn't look quite like this dog, quite a bit smaller, but she's a Maltese. Her name is actually Gucci, unironically, but I call her Gucky. That's my mum. If you want to know what my mum's like, that's her in a nutshell. But yeah, I'm going to pitch this to her because I think Gucky would suit it.
I don't know what that says about your mother, to be honest with you.
I remember when you said that she was calling me Gucci Gooch, and you had to tell her what that was.
Oh yeah, she still calls her Gooch, and I'm like, oh no, babes, please. I explained it to her what it was. I was like,
I forgot about that.
I think it's cute, I'll call her that. She walks the fucking dog and goes, Gooch,
I know you said that all bodies are beautiful, but who really thinks that the Gooch is a beautiful part of the body?
Oh my god, yeah, they're all. Oh, Lorraine, you be a legend.
Oh, she's going to be enamoured with that. I'm going to have to send her this episode just for that.
So, Elvira's agreed to sell Vincent this recipe book. But Gong, this dog is a fucking amazing actor, by the way. The dog is like, knows there's something dodgy going on, so Gong hides the book.
Good hiding place and all.
I know, because nobody finds it. So yeah, Gong knows what's up. Always trust animals. Always. So yeah, Vincent's raging, he doesn't get the book. So this scene, I was watching it today and I was like, I don't like this. I don't know how I feel about it. I guess it's kind of similar to the first scene in which, like, obviously the owner of the TV station grabs Elvira's boobs or whatever. But the teenage boys come, it's raining, and they climb up to watch Elvira undress.
The fucking...
Am I being a bit precious, or, like, were you guys equally as, like...
The fucking audacity of them to flash a Polaroid at her as well. Like, they're surprised they didn't light up the Hale House.
I know.
The fucking flash on that.
What do you think it did?
It did give me the ick. I wish she... I don't know. I feel like they should have had, like, a real comeuppance from that or something. Or she fucking... She doesn't... I wish she, like, bashed the window open or something and, like, fell.
They
and,
do
like...
fall. She slams the window shut in their fingers. And two of them fall.
They deserve better, though.
They didn't give the worse. Picture in the end. I think I would be like more okay with it because yeah, like they do get their comeuppance and in terms of like getting their fingers smashed in the window and then falling off. So obviously that's gonna hurt, but then they walk away with the picture and it's just like
that's still an unsolicited nude picture that you've got
exactly.
From someone.
Yeah. Like nowadays that's highly fucking illegal. So it's just like oh, and it makes me feel like the whole rest of the film just hate these teenage boys.
I mean, we hate teenage boys anyway.
True. and I have more reasons to hate them going forward, but we'll get to those bits when we get to them. So one of them being the decorating montage and how they're all just fucking ogling Elvira the whole time. And, you know, there's the bit where, like, Robin asks for, like, a towel because, obviously, she's working hard and she's sweating and then the blonde one just throws a rag at her. It's like, don't be so fucking rude. You're 15. Elvira's not going to shag you. That's called statutory rape. Like...
why that made me laugh.
It's because we're all dark.
Sometimes. Yes. So yeah, that whole bit just like rubs me up the wrong way. But then I'm also like, these kids are living in this repressed town. They don't get any sex education. They don't have any outlet to explore those feelings. Like of course they're gonna fancy Elvira, but they live in this like highly religious, conservative, puritanical town, and they don't know what to do with their feelings. So of course they're gonna ogle her. But then it fucks me off because that's disgusting. But then. Kind of also don't know any better because they've been taught to be repressed. It's just this whole like cycle of shit.
It kind of fits in with our discussion we had last week on teeth. There's a scene where is it Chastity her name? Ironic name. She like
Chastity Pariah.
That's the one. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
She approaches Vincent and she's like, oh. Next thing you know, they're going to be teaching sex education in school and passing out condoms, and it's like. Yeah. Oh, that's very fitting for what we talked about last week.
I think with the teenage boys, what they could have maybe done, because you're totally right, Lindsay, they are repressed, and of course they're going to look at Elvira. I mean, I think all of us would. But I might just be speaking for myself. But the way they could have done it is, you know, at the start when they're all kind of like doe-eyed and then they push the car for her, it could have maybe just been that little bit more of an innocent, just like, oh, I, you know, all tongue-tied and very like that kind of enamored with her, rather than the kind of like no consent taking pictures and being really, yeah, just like,
I think you should maybe look at, because I think
at that point, like, I want to get a look at those bazongas with whose consent, like,
yeah.
I think as well, like, you know, they like Robin kind of has that around Elvira, like what you were talking about there, Lucy, about more sort of just like admiring her. And And, you know, they portray that, I think, with her quite well, although there's a scene later on at the cinema that bugs me. Not that it's Robin's fault, it's another thing against the teenage boys. But
I think we're thinking the same thing.
Are we thinking of the same thing?
It bugged me as well.
We'll get to it then. Well, I'll save it.
And, of course, Robin is caught by her granny, Mrs. Meeker.
She drags her away by the fucking lug.
By the ear. But as well, and this always confused me when I was a kid as well, they're walking towards Elvira's house, I'm assuming on their way home.
And then she drags
Robin the other way. I was like, where are you going?
They go to church. She's got to confess her sins.
So that ends Robin's time at Elvira's, and then obviously we get the big reveal of Elvira's house, and she loves it, but it's a bit garish for my taste.
For as much as I admire the fact that she loves it, I don't think I'd have that house.
I would have it in a heartbeat.
Oh, we fucking know you would. That's no surprise.
I'll buy it.
I want to sell it again. That's the thing.
Make a profit, you know?
Oh, Elvira, didn't it?
So our next scene, we're going to the Morality Council, which we've heard a few things about, but this is our first time going to it. And I only just noticed on watching it this time that Chastity often wears like this white collar, like a judge. And it's just like, she really thinks that she is the head honcho in this town, with her wee gavel in her hand. But they're talking about Elvira, they're thinking about how they're going to get her out of town. The principal of the school, who, I've got a thing about teeth, right? I'm really sorry to the actor if you're listening, but his mouth's pure rotten, and it grosses me out every single time. Like, I've had a bother with my mouth like my whole life, and when I see folk with like dodgy teeth and that, it just turns my stomach, I hate it. That's maybe a bit too much information about me. But yeah, I just couldn't help but looking at his gammy tooth. But anyway, if the kids hang out with Elvira, they're going to get expelled, and they just really want to get Elvira out of town. But what I was thinking, right, because later on, obviously, the kids are like, oh, we're going to get expelled if we hang out with you. Like, hang out with her. They can't expel all the children.
Well, they say that. They say that later on, don't they? They're like, what are they going to do if we all do it?
Yeah, exactly. They can't expel all the children. What are you going to have to do?
I'd be like, Kenfit, fucking expel me.
I know.
Like, I'm going to hang out with her anyway.
It's like, you know, I'm pretty sure, like, the regional board wouldn't be too happy if you expelled all the children for no reason.
I think what this
it's
also...
like, what's he going to do for a job as well if he's got no children to teach?
Like, I think this as well is this... is really a comment on parenthood as well, like, because you know, people sort of define themselves about whether they're, you know, they're liberal parents or they're strict parents or whatever. It's like, you know what, like, and we saw me and Nico kind of had this discussion a little bit about like the cool mum, because we were doing Mean Girls and we were talking about Amy Poehler, but yeah, like, being this strict with your children is not going to achieve anything other than your children are going to hate you and are not going to know how to live in a society.
I kind of feel like as well, like, not that we ever get to this point in the film or anything, but do you ever feel like you meet people, like, when you go to uni and stuff, and they'll be like, oh yeah, I had really strict parents, and these kids just go off the fucking rails, like, in first year. They're out all the time, they're sleeping with anyone, they're taking anyone, they just go...
Sounds like me.
just too, the basic. Wasn't strict to be helping it at all.
It's a basic principle, though. It's like you tell somebody don't push the red button. What's the first thing you're gonna want to do? Push the red button. So exactly. You know, to repress kids so much where they can't, explore anything or be themselves. Of course, the minute they get a taste of freedom, they're gonna go balls to the wall, or they're gonna run away because they've had enough of it. And you can kind of see this here. You know, they've all been shunned in this tiny town that, you know, everything's kind of shoved into them about being like conservative and doing the right thing and all this kind of stuff. And like, they don't get to see anything of the outside world. And Elvira is the outside world for them. She's that little bit of liberal sexiness, spookiness, everything that town isn't. So they're desperately clinging on to it because they've never had any of that. She's like opening their eyes. You know?
I say all the time that people are terrified of things that are different, and I think this, you could just show somebody this film to, if they want to understand my point, because they see something that's different and they immediately shit the bed and they're just like, how the fuck do we get her out of here, because she's challenging everything that I know. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it.
So people, and like, people don't like upsetting the status quo as well.
Exactly.
And, you know, she represents, Elvira in this movie to the townspeople represents a massive shift in how people live their lives.
Exactly. So at the meeting, it's brought up that she's looking to sell her house, and one of the guys there is the town estate agent. So then we go to the next scene, and he is not even making it a secret of what he plans to do. It's really obvious to the audience anyway that he is like, I am getting my leg over. Did you guys get that?
Yep.
Oh yeah, for sure, straight away. He was very sus from the start.
He fucking thrusts her and everything, doesn't he? Like, he full on gives her a pelvic thrust in the bum.
I don't remember that, but like, he ends up like on top of her and they like fall over on the couch, do they not?
Yeah, there's the floorboard thing, isn't it? When it flips her up and then she falls into him.
Yeah, that's it.
Fucking mink.
He is. He's absolutely disgusting. And then she sets up her open house, at which the townspeople are desperate to get her out of town. She sets up her open house so she can sell the house to get out of town, but everybody's so terrified to be anywhere near her that nobody comes.
It's their own. It's they're being foisted by their own petard. Like, it's their own short-sightedness. Is they can't see past themselves to actually achieve what they want to do. Like, they're so set in that no one should be speaking to this woman, and that this woman is so poisonous that in actual fact their goal can't be achieved by them because they won't even approach her because of the how they feel about her.
Yeah, exactly. So Elvira starts looking for work. Cue anybody that lives in a small community will fucking know about the gossip phone tree that happens in this movie. Everybody talking about her, which eventually leads her to outside the cinema speaking to Bob. Bob's talking about how his business is not doing very well. Elvira needs a job, and I don't think it's explicitly said here, but here they decide that Elvira's going to do a midnight screening of a scary film and a horror film, it's not scary, of a horror film, and get all the kids over for a midnight viewing.
Can I just say, the one of the laugh out loud moments, and it's one of the really sort of childish laugh out loud moments for me, is when she gets caught up the ladder and she like makes that face and she has the word fuck in her hand.
Yeah, that's good.
That was one of my
when she's like, that's not how you spell matinee.
Yeah.
They had the subtables on and it was like matinee with two E's.
I took a minute and I was like, how the fuck do you spell matinee? I couldn't remember.
It's like, you've just got matinee up there now. So after this, we go to Vincent's office and he goes into this like secret, you know, the very stereotypical like bookcase entry in his secret lair, and we finally find out why Vincent's a bit of a dodgy cunt. And
he is though.
Yeah.
I, I think, Lindsay, you have a career in doing character synopsis. You're great, I'm here for it.
You could do, you know what you should do? You know how you get like subtitles for the deaf people? You get those audio descriptions for the blind.
Yes. There you go.
You should totally do that. In walks this dodgy looking cunt.
I would pay extra for that.
We found your future career.
There we go.
Can I get a couch and do it at the cinema like Elvira does?
Yeah. By the way, I'd love to do that. I'd like, you know, like being like a horror host. Like I know like our sort of modern day one is like Joe Bob Briggs and obviously I've watched a number of them. I don't tend to keep as up with them as some people have, but I'd fucking love to do that.
It looks like so much fun. Like, I always love like cinema experiences that are a bit more interactive, like going to see The Room at the cinema. It's like panto, it's so much fun. So yeah, something like that I would love to do. But yeah, in this scene with Vincent, we kind of find out like why he's so like angsty about this recipe book, and we find out there's a bit more of a magical element to this family that Elvira is a part of. What did you think about this? Because obviously Elvira is like a hallmark horror character, but this is kind of bringing more of that like horror element into the film now. So
it was saying, because obviously this was the first time I'd saw it, and bizarrely I'd never had this spoiled for me. Like, I didn't know, like, all I knew was Elvira's, like, relative died. She had to go get the inheritance and went to this, like, really sort of, like, backward town. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of all I knew. I didn't really know what the sort of horror elements of it were. And so we're getting into this movie, and we're a fair chunk into this film by now. I think we're, like, halfway. And I'm sitting here and I'm going, right, okay, when are we getting some fucking sort of like horror stuff? Because like we'd had like the creepy house and I was having a blast, but I was just like, oh, when's, and then this happened, I was like, right, okay, here we go. But I think we all knew that Vincent was a dodgy motherfucker from the moment we saw him. As a man who also has a squinty eye, we're shifty looking dicks.
What did you think about this reveal, Lucy?
I really, well, it wasn't a surprise to me upon watching it recently, because I'd watched it as a kid. I can't remember what my reaction was when I first watched it, but I love this little kind of, you know, connection to magic as well. Because you're right, before this, the only really horror element of this movie, it's, of course, it's a horror movie, is Elvira. So having this kind of magical take on it, it kind of gives me Hocus Pocus vibes a little bit, which I'm totally here for. I thought it was a nice reveal. I liked it. And then we'll get onto it later on as well with the kind of magical battle and all that kind of stuff too.
How much do you guys, speaking of Hocus Pocus, how much do you want to see Elvira as one of the witches with Bette Midler in Hocus Pocus 2?
Oh, I know. That
would
be so good,
that.
Wouldn't it?
Someone get me a new job as a casting director.
You can go, you're the,
you can describe
director.
Him a movie. I'll cast him. Lindsay can describe them for the blind. Lucy, you can market it.
Yeah, there we go. I'll do that. Or
we'll find you something funner to do.
I basically do my day job.
Yeah.
In this.
Lindsay can sort out our pensions. It's fine.
So the next scene is like Elvira trying to like gussy up all the local teens for this midnight showing of I think it's Attack of the Killer Tomatoes they end up watching. And Patty's spying on them. I'm just, oh.
Can I just say, in this scene, when she's like throwing the fake tantrum, that was another laugh out loud moment for me.
It's such like campy perfection, like that whole bit. And then all the kids are like, "We're sorry, Elvira," and like being so nice, and then she's immediately fine. Just the perfect diva. So then we go to the midnight show, and then Elvira reveals that she's gonna do a song and dance number at the end.
Right. Because this was the biggest laugh out loud moment. It's that bit where she's doing like handstands or something, and it keeps cutting to her head upside down, just going. I cut, quickly cutting away. I pissed myself at that point. That was so fucking funny.
I don't know about you guys, but I completely forgot, or maybe I didn't realise when I was listening to it, but there's a bit of the start of the Flashdance song, which is currently like a TikTok trend. So I just had it stuck in my head, and it's like, oh god.
He doesn't want to do this show anymore.
And it's like, folk doing these like funny faces in it, and I could just see like the filter and stuff, and I was like, oh my god. Like, it's funny how like TikTok either like makes things better or kind of ruins things for you.
Which trend is that? I feel like I've not seen that, because when you said that, I immediately thought of the clown face thing, the dee da dee da do do, but I don't think it's that.
No, it's like, there's, oh, I'm trying to think how to describe it.
You can send me one later.
There's a noise, but yeah, I think I'm just gonna have to send you it, because there's kind of like a like at the start that is repetitive, and then at that bit there's like this like evil grinny face that the person who's doing the TikTok does, and yeah, it's really funny. I'm gonna have to send you it.
You know that job I told you about describing things? I take it back. You're not getting it now.
Who's the one that suggested it? I think you should do it. I'm here for it. I'll invest in you, Lindsay. We can set up a wee company.
At least someone believes in me. So what did we think of the Flashdance number? It is, like we were saying before about the fake crime, but it's like campy perfection. Like, this is just like, oh, it's just so good. Like, it knows it's taking the piss, and I love self-referential humor.
Yeah, because she says at the beginning, she's like, oh, I've just stolen this, and then she's like, oh, it's inspired by Flashdance. And I thought that was quite smart to sort of call herself out on it as well. I thought that was really, really clever. And it's another one of those things, like, you know, you make the joke so that other people don't have to as well. And then you've got Patty there as well, and I like how behind the curtain you can only identify her because her nipples are poking through the curtain.
I know.
One of them was pierced as well.
And then obviously Patty hijacks it to Tar and Feather.
Very Carrie.
Very Carrie.
Yeah, that, I got Carrie vibes from that.
Elvira in front of everyone.
Poor Elvira. I was kind of hoping, because obviously I'd not seen it before, so I was kind of hoping that they just went full Carrie and it was blood, because I can imagine, like, if that had happened, Elvira just sort of, like, going with it as well. Mm-hmm. But it was Tar and Feather, so I didn't get my Elvira Carrie cross, full Elvira Carrie crossover, that was one.
I kind of wish she owned it and turned it into, like, a goofy, sexy chicken dance or something after.
I feel like that would have been so on brand.
I know. But at the same time, it was kind of nice to get like a vulnerable side to Elvira.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it a bit more like multifaceted.
Is this where I can complain about the teenage boys now?
Oh yeah! Oh my god, I completely forgot.
So this fucking boy.
I got fucking pissed off. I'm talking first. I got fucking pissed off.
How'd I meet
stupid
you?
Blonde boy for being like, oh, Robin, is that you? And because she's got her hair and her makeup done, she was beautiful before as well. Like, why were you not interested in her then, you shallow prick?
Much more beautiful than he was as well, might I just add.
I know.
Yeah, fucking... that's exactly what I was about to say. The exact same moment. Because, yeah, what a dick. And that's like what, that's probably like the one thing that pissed me off about this movie. Because the kid is still being misogynistic.
Yeah.
And still being incredibly shallow, only noticing her when she's done her hair and makeup. And like you say, she was really pretty beforehand as well. Like, and to be honest with you, I didn't actually see that big a difference, to be honest with you, from the before and after. So, like, yeah, fuck that kid.
And what did you think, Lucy?
I was going to say, she was stunning before and you don't deserve her. Just walk away. It kind of reminded me almost the opposite way, where I'm sure I'm not the only one. I think any woman's experienced this, like, especially if you go, I don't know, if you go to work or something like that, or wherever, and you don't have your makeup on, somebody's like, are you okay? Are you ill? And it's like, no.
I know I just couldn't laugh. Be. It's like that. Are you sick? That's my Why face, is that... you dick.
If you think about it, like comments like that are normal to ask, which is insane. It's like
I look like shit every day of the week. No one's asking if I'm sick.
It just reminded me of that. Like, it shouldn't make a difference whether she's wearing makeup or not. She looks brilliant either way. So yeah, that kind of pissed me off as well.
And like perpetuates that thing as well, which I think definitely when you get older, you know, isn't true. But that like attraction or like if you want someone to be your SO, like it's all skin deep. Like Robin also has a personality. Like she's clearly a very nice, generous girl. Like she goes out of her way to help Elvira. And she's one of the first who also says, like, Elvira, I'll go to the show. Like, so she's clearly, like, a very, like, loyal person as well. And then he only shows any interest in her because, like, she's done her hair and makeup. Fuck off. Like, there's so much more to Robin than just being a pretty girl. So fuck that boy. And it annoys me that he never learns his lesson in this film. But that's, like, probably my only fault. But what I do love is, like, after he does that, and then his friend does it, and the girl's like, oh! And our friend's looking at his
makeup. Was our friend you, Lindsay?
Don't touch my friend.
Is that you in the movie? Don't touch me!
How dare you touch me?
But that's how it should, like, guys think, like, they can just put your arm over you, and you'll be like, oh, and, like, cuddle in. And she's just like... Get
out
for me. I love it. Oh.
Oh. Yeah, you alright there, Hen?
I just keep burping.
Oh, good. This is great podcasting, this.
At least I mute when I burp.
No, which is often.
I just got all my notes on my phone, like about half my notes on the laptop and half my notes on the phone, so I'm like trying to unlock my phone. And burp at the same time. It was a tough time.
The struggle is real.
We could have helped you and just like carried on the conversation.
No,
but I decided to just fucking
call
help.
Me out.
I just had to call you out for you. You're the first to call me out, woman. Like you know, you know, you're the first to call me out. I'm getting you.
Shut up! Stop bullying me.
fucking hell!
Don't die, please.
Oh, I've broken.
Join us next week. We'll be holding the service for Lindsay's fucking funeral.
You better have us in the will, bitch.
I want. Well, everything's going to blossom.
Oh, I'm getting the everything else. Ian is going to be left to you, which is nothing. That's going to be for me, isn't it?
Maybe if you're lucky.
Ah, dear.
So after Elvira's been tarred and feathered, obviously she goes home, cleans herself up, swears revenge on the people of Falwell, and she's wanting to get an interview with old Bob. She shoots him. I don't even know what this mobby hair wee cunt's called.
I don't know what the kid's name is. Have we ever actually told this kid's name? Is this just nameless boy?
I think so.
I'm going to look this up, actually. I should have looked that up.
But Robin and her side piece are shooed away. Robin knows what's up. She's a good gal, pal. She knows exactly what Elvira's wanting to do. And, so she's trying to get an interview with Bob. Bob's like, I'm starving him. So Elvira goes to meet Bob at Casserole in this scene. Like,
the ultimate in romantic food.
I know. This scene, like, as a child, it gave me the bulk. As a teenager, it gave me the fucking bulk. And as an adult, it still gives me the bulk. This thing that she creates is absolutely disgusting. But even the way she makes it as well. Like, I know some people don't really cook, but when she's pulling earthworms out the cupboard and putting them in a casserole dish, I mean, come on.
It made me feel better about my cooking, I'm not going to lie.
I don't even think it was the worms. It was whatever she put in after the worms that was, like, green and mouldy.
So it was, like, worms, and then it was, like, really, really gone off blue cheese, and then she put in like this little salad dressing.
I like, and then she puts in kettle crisps.
Oh yeah,
and fucking cheese from a can.
It was, yeah, like Cheese Whiz. By the way, the kid's name is Randy.
Oh, shut up! No, it's not.
It is.
Don't take
is it actually?
It's Randy. Of course, it's Randy. I don't know where my phone is. I'll put it in the chat. But yeah, I would not be eating this casserole.
So yeah, she brings Bob through to have the dinner, and then she's like, oh, just something I've conjured up as well. I was like, the writers of this film are taking the piss out of me.
So Elvira, she's taking the piss. That's okay.
And a fucking creature comes out of the pot. What did you think of this creature?
It was like a fucking face hugger popping out, like, hello.
I mean, it was kind of hilarious, wasn't it? And the creature, of course, immediately goes for Elvira's tits.
Of course.
Of course.
Obviously.
Because like, the creature's obviously a man. But yeah, like I kind of like the fact that just before this, that Bob's not really up for it in the beginning, because like it's so cliched, isn't it? That it's the other way around, and I like the fact that, you know, she's got like the power. The power dynamic is so shifted in this, especially in this scene, because you know when it's not that there's a sex scene in this movie, but when it's someone going after someone else for some sex, it's always the fucking man, isn't it, who's doing the chasing.
She's the top for sure.
Definitely.
Oh, she could top me any day of the week.
That's what I like about Bob. Like, he's just like a nice guy. It's just like really respectful, and he's just like, he just really likes Elvira. And not because she's like a good looking woman, like, because he thinks she's a nice person. I'm like, that's cute. And you don't get that with people, like characters like Elvira, who are so hypersexualized, and especially women. They're normally like throwaway characters in films, especially in horror films.
Can I just say how hilarious it was as well when she's like reading the recipe book and she's like, oh, that must mean casserole. It's like nothing like casserole. She's like, oh, that's a casserole.
I just found my notes on Bob earlier, and I think this kind of describes what I was trying to say earlier, but he's a good cunt. He's a bit simple, but he's a good cunt, eh?
Yeah, that's pretty much. That's for, probably what they said at the writer's desk
for,
as well.
For anyone who's not Scottish, by the way, cunt is a very, very, very big term of affection.
Yeah.
It's a term of endearment in this country.
It's so funny, because you could just be like, oh, they cunts over there, and if you're not Scottish, like, somebody thinks, like, you want to square up to them, and it's like, no, we just mean people. Like...
And there's all different kinds of cunts here as well. You've got funny cunts, you've got sound cunts, you've got...
Fucking cunts.
You've got, oh dear, I'm just trying to get us banned. I really have to put that explicit tag on this episode.
Oh, no, please don't cancel us.
Yeah, please don't cancel us, network that we're not on. We broke Lindsay.
No, sorry, my cat is demanding my attention.
All right, okay.
Sorry. So yeah, this whole scene with the creature and how it's killed in the garbage disposal, I think it's like, oh, what do you think?
It's
pretty bulky.
It's so slimy and gross, and it's so shit coloured. Like the casserole itself is so horrendous. Like, I don't know. I know I'm jumping ahead just a little bit, but the scene later where she sort of like remakes the casserole, but obviously doesn't do it quite right. Was anyone else just feeling? Was you just feeling a little bit ill watching everyone like wolfing down this casserole, knowing what it looked like last time?
And see, for the bit later on, it's not that, it's the fact that fucking Jesse puts a big fucking sausage finger right through it.
Oh, that gave me the book.
That is disgusting.
And then, like, she started eating off the spoon that everyone else was using and all.
Yeah,
that is not COVID safe.
No,
at all.
Definitely not.
That's not the biggest thing that made me balk about that scene in Chastity, but well.
Oh, no, I know exactly what you're going to fucking say.
Care guy's face.
So Elena and Bob kill this monster, and Gonk again is fucking off with this book. He's gone. He's trying to hide it. He knows it's full of power.
I don't know why that's so funny. It's
it's full of power.
I don't know why that's funny.
And Gonk goes into this room that Elvira has previously dreamt about, and we get a wee fourth wall break, like, oh, deja vu. and we go in, and it's full of obviously all of Morgana's stuff, and Gonk leads her to this trunk that's full of magic thingies and a letter for Elvira. What do you call them? Yeah, what do you call them? He's just sitting there laughing.
He's in one of those moods tonight.
Laughing at me.
Magic thingies.
What do you call them? There's a fucking skull. There's a wee weird heat in it. Like, I don't understand what you want from me right now in this moment.
I don't want anything. They're just little trinkets.
Well,
I don't want... Lindsay, have you seen that TikTok? It's the remix of the "Who you laughing at? No fucking laughing." That's what you're like right now.
For someone who's talking about the movie she loves so much, it's full of rage. Full of rage.
I can't get that TikTok sound out of my head.
This episode was derailed so fucking long ago, I wouldn't worry about it at this point.
It's the high-pitched laughs for me.
I like... I don't know how anyone even understands what we're saying, to be quite honest. Everyone's like, sound cunt, what the fuck's this boy speaking about?
So there's a letter in this trunk for Elvira, and we find out that...
Oh, it's the line, sorry to jump in. Do you think it's for me? Sorry, on go.
She's like, refuses to read it. Like, I've been in those situations so many times, like, it's for you. And I'm like, you do it. Like, I don't want to do it. But I would find out that Elvira's mum, Divana, was a very powerful witch, and Morgana hid Elvira away so that she could be protected from Vincent, because Vincent all along has been after this like great power that Divana and now Elvira has. So what did we think about this revelation?
I think it was absolutely necessary, because I think at this point, if you're in terms of like the plot and a horror aspect of the plot, we needed a little bit of direction, we needed some exposition, and I thought this was like a really sort of fun way of doing it. You know, the jokes and that are still in there, like you're saying, you know, when she asks if the letter's for her, and you know, she sort of gives the wink to the camera at the very end of the scene where her and Bob are finally going to do the deed. And yeah, I thought this was just like a yet another really fun scene. Like, I think, you know, throughout this entire movie, when you're doing films like these, it can be really easy for them to drag at points and for them to just feel really long and just, you know, totally drag its feet. And I never felt like that this did it at any point. So yeah, I felt this was like another really fun way of progressing the story.
I know we're kind of like skipping it ahead a wee bit, but one of the things I really like about this film, because although I watched it twice this week, and the first time I watched it, it was actually just before the cancer roll scene. I paused it so I could go to the toilet, and I was like, well, there's still half an hour left. And I knew that there was a cancer roll scene, and in this scene, the scene coming up, and then obviously the showdown and the ending to go. And I was like, oh my God, they've still got all this to pack into like half an hour, 35 minutes. And I was like, geez, like they pack a lot into this film.
You know what's funny though about that is like, I did feel like the probably like the only criticism I think I have of this movie is they jump to burning her at the stake really quickly. like that all, like it just like a really really short space of time seems to happen, and you know, she's gone from tricking them with a casserole at a picnic to being burned at the stake. Like, you know what I'm saying? That happens really, really fast. And I personally, I would have liked like just a little bit more in there.
I do think they try and set it up slightly early on when Vincent says to his like two little cronies to get all the town ordinances. Because I think he's thinking ahead, like, how can I potentially get rid of her? So I think the cogs are maybe turning in his head early on, but maybe the audience maybe could have had a little something for that.
I don't think that was enough to give us the full sort of wink, wink, this is going to happen later in the movie, so that when it did happen, you know, like I know when I watched it, I didn't think back and be like, oh, that's what Vincent was wanting the ordinance for. I don't speak like that, but you know, so I didn't really sort of put those two together. So yeah, I think I just need, even if they just sort of mentioned something else, all you needed, I think, really was a little 30-second scene or something somewhere else in the middle of the two things happening, just to sort of connect it a little bit more. But I mean, this is a relatively minor gripe. Like, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, it's ruined the film or anything.
Yeah, so let's jump back a minute to the Morality Club picnic. So whenever I think about this film, like, this scene is the first thing I think about. What did you guys think of it?
Is face taken? She actually says to him, is this face taken? And then sits on his face. I was done. That was it.
It clearly works. I might try it.
I want to know what's in it. But
it's iconic.
Holy Jesus. Like, I was like, no, this isn't happening. This isn't happening. I was like, oh, it's happening. That was...
It was before that, the fucking, the hot dog, he's like, this remind you of anything? And then she gets the fucking taco shell. It's like, does this remind you of anything?
I don't fucking hope no. That was a fucking tiny sausage as well, by the way. I'd be like, if I fucking remind you of something, you've got fucking problems, dude. He's not going to pleasure you. Your taco is going to go unfilled and unsatisfied.
As we've just kind of briefly discussed, all the townspeople become quite lose all their sexual inhibitions. And to be honest, you watch it and it's like, it's what they need. Do you know what?
They just need a big fucking orgy, that's it.
They do. They all just
need a shag.
Aye, exactly. Like, we've all these things that they're so repressed about, they're all made to be fun. Do you know what I mean?
And you know, like,
drinking after 8 o'clock, like
the thing,
the whole puritanical attitudes to sex. It's like,
the thing is as well, right? So these townspeople, you know, their inhibitions have been let down. They're all really frisky and that, and they're obviously all having like, you know, a big blast around it. There's no negative consequences to them for that happening as well. So it proves to that, it should prove to them, you know, oh, we've just done this thing that we've been so against, but, you know, nothing's happened. You know, the world isn't burned down. We might go and burn a witch in a minute, but you know what I'm saying? So, like, there's no consequence for that. Like, and I think that's a message that needs to be passed on. Obviously, providing that you, you know, protect yourself and protect others, and it's always consensual and things like that. There's no consequences to having sex. There's no consequences to having safe, consensual, protected sex. Other than you're gonna have a fucking good time, providing you can what you're doing.
And from the sounds of it, in the scene after, where I can't remember who says it to Chastity, that she could break a mechanical bull or something, sounds like she had a great time.
Sounds like she's got fucking thighs of steel, that woman.
Exactly. So like Lucy's just said, like, we reconvene at the Morality Club afterwards, like, everybody is losing the absolute tie about what's just happened at the Valley Club picnic.
That's just the way you're saying things tonight. You're tickling me so much.
Look, don't lose the tie, though.
That should be our new slogan. Don't lose the tie. Need to make that into merch.
That's a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
This is the giant potato. Someone with a magnifying glass.
A And as we kind of mentioned before, Vincent convinced him all to arrest Elvira for witchcraft. So obviously, Falwell is in Massachusetts, so it's quite ironic that this has a whole, or maybe appropriate, depending on how you feel, has a witchcraft element to it all.
Well, I'm sure. I'm sure it was, and that's why they chose Massachusetts. So I'm sure it wasn't by accident that, you know, she was in Massachusetts. But yeah, very fitting.
What do you think, Lucy?
Sorry, I was trying not to cough and die there. No, I thought it was quite fitting as well, being in Massachusetts. It was a nice touch. On the note earlier about the, what you were saying, Ian, about the scenes and how it felt like quite dramatic going from that to the burning at the stake, I do think it would have been nice to have a little bit of dialogue beforehand, but I actually kind of like how dramatic it is, and it goes from one to the other, because it shows like how batshit crazy these people are that live in this town, and they're immediately like, witch, got a burner, oh my god, you know, not that we've just had this great time at this orgy, no, we've got a burner. But I think it adds to the humor, it adds to the humor of it, I think. Like,
I definitely see that point of view. I definitely get that. I think for me, it's not necessarily so much that they jump from that, it's the explanation for why they do it, you know, like we were talking about with Vincent asking for the ordinances to the beginning. We don't really ever, you know, I just wanted something in the middle there. I'm not necessarily against it jumping from that to that. I feel like we need to have like a little bit more explanation somewhere else in the movie. But I mean, that's a personal thing. That's down to me. So I can totally see your side of things.
That's fair. That's fair.
So the town prepares to burn Elvira at the stake. They're also going to burn Gonk at the stake as well. That was a bit harsh.
They did build him his own wee podium, though.
I know. It's kind of funny.
Because she's like, oh, you're not going to get burned at the stake. And she looks out the window and they're building this tiny little wee podium for him. Like, oh, sorry.
And of course, during the revelation that Elvira is from a long line of witches, there's reference to a familiar. And in this scene, we find out that it's Gonk, and he
turns into a wee rat. Into
a wee rat.
So cute.
I was gonna say, do you think you'll do that with any of your rats here? But they're maybe a wee bit too old for that.
They're too set in their ways. They're too set in their ways. One of them can't even climb the cage anymore. He's too old and blind. So.
Oh.
I have a proposition for you. One night you can go in. No, not like that.
What's going on here? No,
not like that.
Which one of us are you speaking to?
Ian,
No,
not like that. Get into drag, cosplay as Elvira, and have one of the ratties as your familiar. Have a little photo shoot. See, that's nice.
At this rate, I wouldn't even need the fake tits. I could just put my own ones out there. Oh. I need to shave them.
I was trying to be nice and you took it to the gutter straight away.
I did take it to the gutter! Just saying that
I've got... position.
Oh, I thought you meant about my tits.
No, not about that.
I'll take that to the gutter. Okay, I see you now.
Okay. Disgusting.
So... Vincent's followed Bob to the house and he gets the book, and Rat Gonk goes to the house and he rescues Bob. The teams also try and rescue Elvira. they got in the wrong cell, bless them.
They tried.
I know, they're so cute. But Rat Gonk has rescued Bob, and Elvira, thinking about the letter that her Aunt Morgana gave her, realises that her ring... When I was writing this, my mind's in the bloody gutter. I wrote, Elvira realises she's probably in her ring, and I'm like, maybe I was watching a different film. but she realises...
Doesn't your rings shoot lightning, no?
ring of fire?
she realises that the gem in her ring is powerful, and she creates a rainstorm.
I never even thought of that, and now that's all I can think of.
I know, I'm sorry, it was in my head. I had to put it in yours as well. Shannon's Karen.
Well, we know that from the orgy earlier.
So, the girl is free, she can finally battle Vincent to ensure that he doesn't gain all the power in the lunar eclipse. What did you think of this final showdown?
I mean, like, the exposition for this bit is like, okay then, right, come on. It's no... it's not the most thought through act, but then we're not watching this for like sensational storytelling, aren't we, in like a horror terms, so I guess I can't really complain too much about it. It's funny. it's just as funny. I think that's the thing about this film, like, it's so consistent. Like, there's no point in this where you think, oh, I don't really like, oh, those jokes didn't really work, or, you know, that bit wasn't as funny as this bit. Yeah, obviously it's got its it's got its, like, you know, more memorable scenes, like, you know, the picnic scene and things like that. But I think the standard of the sort of storytelling in the comedy is very, very, you know, consistent throughout the entire film. So there's no real, even this end bit, and it's so campy, this entire sort of end chase, you know, when, like, they go to the graveyard and then back at the house. And then, you know, they have like an alleyway scene as well. And she comes out bursting out the shop with her gun.
Like, total Rambo reference.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's just it's just great, isn't it?
What did you think, Lucy?
I love it. It's so campy. And the thing that I love about this movie as well, even when effects are questionable or there's like editing hiccups, it almost adds to the charm of it, even if it's not, if it's not done intentionally. I like to think it is, but it's the 80s, you know. Some of it,
I also think, like, stuff like that, it's a little bit of a shout out, isn't it, to all those proper old horror movies as well, with their shit effects and their bad editing and all, and their, you know, questionable scores and soundtracks and things like that. It's definitely a bit of a shout out to that, and that's, you know, the topic matter of the whole thing that Elvira's trying to achieve, isn't it? You know, she was a horror host, in that opening scene, you know, displaying these abysmal horror movies, these bad horror movies. So that's kind of like the whole thing, isn't it? So the movie's almost like paying homage to that a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of like B-horror movies, like the 30s and the 40s, the over-dramaticness. Like,
yeah.
I think because this movie can make fun of itself, it's appropriate when things like that happen, where it's like the funny edits and stuff like that. It just adds to it.
Can we watch a commentary, speaking of B-movies, an Elvira commentary on Birdemic?
Yes.
There's my episodically Birdemic mention.
So, of course, Elvira defeats Vincent, but she's also completely destroyed her house. She's broke, and she's just a bit bereft in the end with wee Gonk, and not really knowing what to do. But the town's had a change of heart. What did you think in the end when the town's basically apologising to her? Patty's like, I'm so sorry. Like,
before I go on to that, I forgot to comment, that scene where she breaks open the padlock with her boobs as well.
Oh,
is iconic.
Yeah, I know, like that scene where she's just like this, and I'm like, just duck. Like... You can fit in that sideways.
But yeah, that's kind of iconic. Well, I think there had to be a bit of a redemption arc here, didn't there? Because I think, had it just been that the town remained really nasty to her and she moved on and got her show in Vegas, which obviously we find out because she ends up being the sole inheritor of Vincent's estate. And yes, gets all his money, because obviously the stuff she got from her great aunt Morgana is now worthless. The house is burnt down, and the recipe book was in there as well. That got burnt. She couldn't save that. But I think there had to be a bit of a redemption arc for the town. There had to be some sort of, even if it was not necessarily a full-on apology, there had to be some sort of remorse, because I feel like if there wasn't, the message would have got a bit lost.
Yeah. What do you think, Lucy?
Yeah, I really like this tie-in at the end, you know, with the kind of whole redemption arc of the town and the kind of forgiveness. And it has a nice message behind it, because, you know, we've been talking this whole time about, you know, how Elvira is unapologetically herself. She doesn't judge anyone else based on how they look or how they act or anything like that. So it's a lesson for them, but like, it's a very basic lesson, but it's something that I think we've all at some point needed to remind ourselves, is don't judge a book by its cover and treat other people how you want to be treated. And I really like that. And I think it's an important message. And like I said before, I think this is a great movie for kids to watch as well, just even for that lesson and for that last scene as well.
Can I just say as well, I would go and see that Vegas show.
Okay.
I know, it looks so much fun.
Can I just say, as somebody that has done tassel twirling before, tasseling one side of your boob compared to the other, it's fucking hard. It's actually really difficult to do. So chi-chi Cassandra, because it's quite difficult. It's harder than it looks.
Okay. And he's like, gonna try that when we're off camera.
No, I've never tried it, but I always kind of remember thinking as a kid, like, how the fuck do you do that? Like,
the way you move your arm. Oh, your shoulder, that's how you do it.
Every day's a school day.
So, have we got anything else we want to say about this film? What are some of the highlights for you? What are some of the lowlights?
Can I just say as well, as I didn't get a chance to mention this, I fucking want our car.
Oh, yeah. Yes, the car is so fucking cool.
Like, with that like chain steering wheel and the spider web grill at the front, and yeah, I fucking want that car.
Yeah. Oh, I love old cars, and that one is amazing.
But I mean, I think for me, highlights of the movie, any scene that Elvira's in. You know, I think in terms of comedy, I think I pointed out some of the sort of big laugh out loud moments for me. The flash dance scene is a particular highlight for me. But obviously as well, in terms of memorable moments, you got the picnic scene, even though I was mildly horrified. But yeah, I there's not many lowlights for me. I think I mentioned the only real sort of nitpick thing I have. Probably the nitpicks that I had was things like, you know, the jump from the lack of exposition around how they decided that she was going to get burned at the stake, and the lack of comeuppance for Randy being a wee misogynistic dick.
Let's see, what are some of your highlights and lowlights?
I love the slapstick humour that's in this. I think it's hilarious. I think there needs to be credit given as well to the costuming. I know like Elvira doesn't have that many outfits in this, but that like that Las Vegas outfit, the bra, it is stunning. I think that, like, you know, the outfit she has in the flash mob scene, and also like her makeup is so iconic, and you can see people kind of doing that makeup now with the, even I've done it, like the inner eyeliner with the white and like the purple and stuff. Like, the look of Elvira is timeless. And I think, yeah, there needs to be credit given to costuming, makeup. The music in this is great. The writing, the only fault I really have is that scene where it's the teenage boys, and it's the taking the photo unsolicited. The teenage boys leave a bit of a book in my mouth, to be honest. That's the only gripe I really have with this.
Yeah, I'm the same. I wish there was a point in this film where maybe these teenage boys learned a lesson that about how we treat women and girls a bit better, and maybe if they behaved like this, they would, you know, get the girl, and you know what I mean?
I think, though, aside from that specific aspect, this is still a great movie to show anyone for, you know, female empowerment and women empowerment and feminism and all that sort of thing. This is still a fantastic movie for that.
Definitely, yeah. Okay, dokes, have you guys got anything else you'd like to say?
That's it for me.
Cool. Well, let's move on to the trivia then. So this film had a budget of $7.5 million and it made $5.6 million at the box office.
Boo.
I know.
Yeah,
that's sad.
Yeah. I actually didn't realize that. I thought the budget was actually going to be a bit lower than that. I'm actually a little bit surprised it was as high as that. And I'm not meaning that as a critique of the movie. I just didn't realize that it was. I'm not saying that's high budget because it's not, but there was a little bit of money in this.
So some of the money might have actually been on the car. So Elvira's macabre mobile was created for the film.
I think it's macabre mobile.
Oh yeah. the 1958 T-Bird hardtop was purchased for $2,500 and went through $7,000 plus in alterations. The automobile has remained in the possession of Cassandra Peterson, who continues to use this when she does personal appearances as Elvira.
Iconic.
That's great, but that's not really that big part of the budget. That was $9,500.
No. Well, I was like... All right, calm down. It's not that funny. So, Cassandra Peterson began her career as a Vegas showgirl. Career that her character pursues. The painting of Elvira's great aunt Morgana is actually a painting of Cassandra Peterson without the makeup and the black wig.
I thought it looked like her, actually. I didn't know that, but you can definitely see that.
Yeah. Trez McNeil, who plays the anchorwoman, is the voice of Bubarella, who is the Elvira parody on The Simpsons. The character of Vincent Talbot was named as an homage to Vincent Price and Lyle Talbot. The anchorwoman character is actually based on a real anchorwoman Cassandra Peterson did not get along with during her days on local television. Peterson actually wanted Tim Burton to direct the movie, but he was actually making Beetlejuice at the time. So in the last scene during the Las Vegas production number, Cassandra Peterson was actually violently ill with the flu, which you can't tell at all.
Oh no, not at all.
This film, I seen this and I was like, this is so rubbish. This film was nominated for the worst picture at the Hastings Bad Cinema Society's 11th Stinkers Bad Movie Award in 1988.
So a bunch of men then, right?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
So as you can imagine from Elvira being famous for Movie Macabre, this has like loads of references in it and spoofs like loads of things, including The Wizard of Oz, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, The Thing with Two Heads, The Waltons, Carrie, which you guys both noted, Flashdance, Cool Hand Luke, The Exorcist, First Blood, and of course Elvira's own show, Movie Macabre.
What was The Exorcist reference? I missed that.
I don't know.
I know, I'm just going to try. You're listing them off there, and I'm sort of checking them all off in my head, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't remember The Exorcist one. It's probably something dead obvious.
Yeah. And the two films featured in the film is It Conquered the World and Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, which is on Prime in the UK, mm-hmm. if you want to watch it.
I think it's hidden deep in the back of the horror section. You know, you like start flicking through that horror section on Prime and you get like the real shit. There's some right dregs up the back there. I think that's how I saw Attack of the Tatty Bogle. I saw a movie on there. Oh, that's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
So after this film, there were plans for sequels and other things, but a lot of it didn't really go to plan. So Peterson actually sold the script for a sequel, but this got tied up when Carlico Pictures, who she sold it to, went bankrupt. And then in 1993, they were trying to get a sitcom off the ground, the Elvira Show, but they failed to secure a spot for it on TV. The there was a film announced, Elvira versus the Vampire Woman, but a contract dispute prevented it from being produced. So we eventually got Elvira's Haunted Hills in 2001. But Elvira and her husband at the time had to finance it because no studio would put any money behind it. And they also struggled to get anyone to buy the distribution rights, which I was reading all this and it's like, Elvira's such an iconic character and even she has so much trouble.
I think what's shocking about that is the fact that it's 2001 as well. I think if you're still saying, you know, like, I know Elvira's been around for a long, long time and, you know, we've you know, credited her on sort of the longevity of this character that she's had. But I think, you know, if you turned around and said, oh, it's the mid-80s and she was really struggling to get this film financed, you'd be like, right, okay, you'd kind of maybe understand a little bit. But the fact that it was 2001, she was an absolute icon, but she was an icon long before that. But, I mean, in terms, like, so iconic. So the fact that no one was willing to, you know what, we'll take a chance on this. Is it really taking a chance? Because you know for a fact, if Elvira's doing something, the genre fans are going to come out in force for her in a post-millennium world.
It's quite interesting as well, because in recent years, especially, Elvira's become such a commodity in terms of branding. Like, Elvira has a makeup palette with Lunatic Cosmetics. I think Elvira's done stuff with Creepsville as well, the clothing brand. Like, you can put Elvira's face on pretty much anything and horror fans and fans of horror will probably buy it.
I mentioned it already, but there's been a sort of renaissance of the sort of horror host, isn't there, in the past, especially in the past 5 or 6 years with Joe Bob Briggs. And, you know, Darcy the Mall Girl sort of fell in that sort of Elvira role on that show. So, you know, like, they've proven that the demand is there for it.
Well, this is kind of more like a general Elvira fact, but it's funny that you say about her, like, clothing brand and the makeup line, because Elvira has thought of doing, like, an animated version of herself, like, since before Mistress of the Dark came out. She even pitched an animated series idea to Netflix and Shudder in 2019, and they both turned it down.
Really?
Yeah. Surprised that Shudder turned it down.
I was really shocked at that as well. But around the same time, she was invited into the Scooby-Doo franchise, and she's appeared in two animated Scooby-Doo films.
Fucking good on Scooby-Doo.
And she has said that as a result of her experience on that, it was really, really good. She reckons that her next film will be an animated feature.
I just think it's...
And as of, like, late 2020, she has been, like, thinking about ideas for that.
I just think it's kind of disgusting. She's clearly someone, like, we've all these like positive things we've just said about Elvira in this movie and her character in general, about how smart she is and, you know, and how quick-witted and you know, such a powerful role model and character that she is as well. How poorly treated, even in 2019, in 2021, that she is still so poorly treated by, you know, these massive companies. You know, I just find it ridiculous. Why, if you are a horror streaming service, if you are Shudder and you have the opportunity to work with Elvira, I don't understand why you don't have a whole fucking channel dedicated to her, because you know what I mean? Like, you obviously get it. Like, I don't get why you wouldn't want that as a horror channel.
I know, I just find that bizarre. Even when you're at Netflix, like, the running joke with Netflix is that they'll make anything, and they turn down Elvira. Like, what the fuck?
And they make a Kissing Booth 3, but they don't have an Elvira animated series.
They made Perfection,
well,
and they didn't. Like, I'm joking.
Oh, the face. Didn't do that
yet. The turn.
You're a fucking dick. What was I going to say? Oh, I can't fucking remember now. Thanks, Ian.
Good.
Oh, this is what I was going to say. No. I think it's actually really genius as well that Elvira's thinking about going down the animation route. Cassandra Peterson is now 60, and in terms of longevity for the character, like, she gets up in that Elvira drag, like, maybe it's not going to be viable for the next 10, 20 years. Moving into animation is such a brilliant idea. So yeah, I'm all for it, and I hope we get something soon.
Having said that, she is 60, and she looks fucking fantastic.
Oh, she does.
Like, amazing. We found the other thing that will survive with Cher. What was it last week?
Cher, cockroaches, and Elvira.
And Elvira. Yeah. Wasn't there someone else? I thought we'd figure something else. Maybe it was Elvira. Although it was part of the conversation about Nick this week, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she is definitely going to survive the nuclear holocaust. The nuclear holocaust? Oh, fucking hell. I'll cut that out.
have you guys got any of your own wee bitties of trivia?
No, you had fucking tons of the stuff there.
I know. I was actually really happy this week because
the last few weeks have been a bit.
It has been a wee bit trivia light. Like, not that that's anybody's fault or anything, but like, it was quite nice to have a trivia section.
You had a lot there.
Yeah, there was actually more. I cut a lot out.
I only had one, and it's not really related to the movie, but it's related to Elvira, and I just saw it and. I haven't seen this show, but I think we should all watch it. Elvira had a reality TV show called The Search for the Next Elvira in 2007.
What?
So yeah, it was a competition to find the next late night horror cult movie host. So it kind of like Drag Race for Elvira, I guess. I've not seen it. I don't know where it'll be available to stream, but it was from 2007. They only did one season of it. But I think we should watch it. I want to watch it anyway.
They did one season of it because they did one season and then realised there is no next Elvira. There is only Elvira.
That's true.
Although it was that kind of time, like in the 2000s, where they did reality TV shows like that. Remember Paris Hilton's British Best Friend?
Yes.
That was the most random thing ever.
I think the worst one for me was Rock of Love. Anyone remember Rock of Love?
That rings... What was...
It was like The Bachelor, but for the rock. What was his name? I can't remember the musician's name. I think it's a stretch calling him a musician.
You meant Dwayne the Rock Johnson. No, and it was his love show.
He was in Poison. Was it Poison he was in? I can't remember. Anyway, these women would try and date, and then they had the spin-offs, and one of them was Flavor of Love, and it was with Flavor Flav.
They started putting them on.
They're all on Prime. They're on Prime.
Reminded me of Shake and Lay on All Stars 5.
Yeah.
Flavor Flav.
Right, so with that,
let's get fucking moving here.
Let's go on to the ratings. IMDb rated this at 6.6. Metacritic rated it at 43%. Bit harsh. Very, very harsh. Let's play our favourite game. We'll say, what did the Rotten Tomatoes critics rate Elvira, Mistress of the Dark?
Well, I was going to say the critics are always harsh, but we had the shock of teeth last week at 80%, so I kind of don't know where to go with this. I will have faith. That blew you away, Ian.
Dead. Honestly, I'm still no sure. I don't understand.
I'm gonna go 65, a little bit above average from the critics.
Okie dokes. Let's see you, Ian.
I have no fucking clue. Like, I don't know anymore. What's real? It's what's real. I don't know what's real and what's not. Since it's Elvira and everything's hypersexualized and I seem to pick it every week, we'll go with comedy 69.
So Lucy's going to take this one. They rated it 48.
Ooh.
That's bad.
That is bad. So Lucy, as soon as you won, what do you think the audience rated it?
I would like to think the audience rated it a lot higher. Because it's a cult classic as well, so I'm gonna say 85.
I would like to think that they would, but the fact that it's a cult classic would suggest that the majority probably don't. I'm gonna go the opposite way, and I think they've been equally as harsh in general. So I'm gonna go 50.
So Ian takes it this time. Lizzie, you should have stuck with your answer for the last one. It's 65% is what the audience
rated. Better than the critics, at least.
And for the first time ever, I think we don't have a critics' consensus.
We didn't have one when I was doing. There was an episode I was recording. Must have been one of the bonus ones that we didn't have a critics' consensus. It's happened a couple of times now.
Yeah, I think it's just not enough top critics have rated it. Some should have put that. So I've not forgotten, it just wasn't there.
We're a top critic. We're a top critic.
So let's go on to our ratings. So Lucy, what do you rate Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, out of 10?
I really love this movie. I'm going to rate this what I wish I rated Adam's Family, because I think I like these both at the same par, so I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10. I really like this. The only discrepancy I have is with the teenage boys, but I don't think that takes away from, it's still not right, but I don't think it takes away from the charm of the movie. And like I said, I really wish I gave Adam's Family that rating, and I think this deserves a 9 out of 10. So yeah,
what did you give Adam's Family?
8.5.
Oh yeah. No.
It deserved more than that, because I think you maybe gave it 10s, or one of you had 9 and somebody had I wish I gave it a 9.
I think I gave it a 9. Anyways.
Ian, what do you rate Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, out of 10?
So I'm going to swap roles with Lucy for this one. I'm going to give this one an 8.5. With the only discrepancies I have is the thing with the boys, the couple of things that I sort of mentioned previously. So that's like three little things, so we'll take like a half mark off for each, because I don't think they're fully justified in taking full marks off, and I would be remiss to give this a 7. This is way, way better than that. This is still a brilliant comedy movie, but it has a much deeper message than that as well, and is actually, you know, quite topical for 2021. And Elvira. It's like, she's amazing, and, you know, she's iconic, and she's all these things that we've been saying. She's smart, she's funny, she's beautiful, she's glamorous. Everything you can throw at her. She's kind, she's generous, she's non-judgmental. And she portrays it all in this movie expertly, whilst giving us some absolutely hilarious lines. Things like, what's your any last words? Yeah, help!
That was one of the moments I laughed out loud. That gets you every time.
So yeah, 8.5 out of 10 from me.
I am going to rate this film 9 out of 10. Like, that shouldn't really shock anybody. I've spoken about Elvira a lot on the podcast, and I absolutely love her. And I love this film. It's just about embracing who you are, and like, just not judging people. And it's just a fun fucking movie as well. I mean, I've got the listener opinions coming up, but I'm just so glad that I've not really seen anybody shit on this film, and that, like, you guys seem to love it as much as we do as well. So yeah, 9 out of 10. So where does that put us on the scoreboard?
Oh, well, you're gonna be rich. That's, I've just seen where this is, right? So all our scores and the critic scores gives Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, an average rating of 6.2 out of 10. Ties it for 56th place of the now 93 movies we have covered on the podcast. And it has the exact same score as Eden Lake.
Oh, get fucked!
What? Bearing in mind that the three of us gave Eden Lake a 4 out of 10, but the critics pulled it up to a 6.2. We have given Elvira an average of approximately 8.8, given, you know, the decimalizations, and the critics have dragged it down to a 6.2. So if it was only going by our ratings, this would actually be the third best movie we'd covered on the podcast.
As it should.
But no, it's going to languish away in 56th place there with Eden Lake. It's also just above Sinister and just below Insidious.
Oh, Mare Films done it like, great.
What do you expect? It's a 50 fucking sec. It's not going to be the best of gear doing there.
It's Sonic Solid, Jesus.
What do you think I'm going to say? Oh, 56th place, fucking Psycho in A Nightmare on Elm Street. They're doing there, eh? I don't know why. That just reminded me of that TikTok with that Scottish boy on the roof.
Oh my god.
I don't want to see that video. That's
where do you fucking want me to put my weight?
It's
just the boy behind the car. You need to went up there, you dick.
If anything described our country in a nutshell, it's that video.
For those who are listening to the audio only version, we broke Lindsay again.
Just a bit.
So let's get into some of these listener opinions. So Miss Galileo Jones said, oh my
who?
God, Miss
don't
Galileo.
Know. Never heard of her before.
Who's don't know her. Who?
Galileo, who dat?
Who dat? Who this? She said, oh my god, I love it. Quote it at least once a day. I've seen it way too many times. I've seen it way too many times to be considered normal. Elvira is the embodiment of intelligent, strong, sexy, independent women. This movie is goofy fun and sends the message that it's okay to be sexy and smart and weird. Yes, I agree. Matthew Fred says, I always admired Peterson but never really cared too much for the Elvira character. The movie is a decent enough comedy and a character piece for Elvira, but it's not one of my favourites. I see it mostly as a campy comedy. Oh, I can't speak.
No change there then.
I know, that I still watch from time to time for nostalgia.
What I like about that is, like, this isn't going to be everyone's cup of tea. So not everyone's going to like this kind of movie. I like the fact that even though they don't like it as much, they still see that it's, you know, it's worth. They still see that it has worth. You know, yeah. How many times have we heard someone, "Oh, I didn't like that film. It's just shit. It's so shit. I don't watch it." Like, no. Like, you cannot like something and still appreciate what it does and appreciate, you know. What's good about it?
The Nightmare Nerd said, awesome, fun movie and got far more out of the character than you would have expected for the time. And that's true, and it kind of goes back to that thing I was saying about, like, Dolly Parton. Like, it totally plays into that sexy thing. Like, she makes fun of it before you can, and I don't think a lot of films at the time were doing that. So, yeah, definitely agree with you there, Nightmare Nerd. Orville's Wedding said, I watched it for the first time last year and liked it a lot. Couldn't believe that I let it go on for so long. Ian just watched it today. So, Orville's Wedding, you're not as bad as this cunt you are.
That's all right, I'm a sound cunt, really. And a funny one.
And a modest one.
I know. Humble queen, we love it. And Emery's Mummy 3011 said, I love it, such a great film. I agree, it is.
I think it's funny because a lot of the comments that we got were really succinct and to the point, you know, just like, I fucking love it. I love it, I love it. And it's like, I love those comments as well, because sometimes you're like, you don't want to break something down and be like, oh, this is why I love it. I love it because of this and this and this. Sometimes it's just nice to just be like, I fucking love this. And that'll be it.
Exactly. So do you guys have anything else you want to say before we do socials and get out of here?
No, I think we've covered everything with this film, haven't we? We've talked about it for 2 full hours now, so...
Oh, Jesus, that's longer than the actual film.
It is, aye.
It is?
Fucking hell. So, Ian, what are we doing next week?
Oh, I was like, I don't fucking know.
It's your choice.
Before we get to next week's, tune in this Sunday For Candy and Sean's return to the podcast, we're going to be talking about the 2003 movie Wrong Turn. But next week on the show, back to my choice. And I know you two are so excited for this one. We're talking about the original Martyrs.
Cousin.
This is possibly, like, I feel like I felt like I've sold it really high now. And I don't want to, like, send you in with expectations. Like, I kind of want you to just go in and watch it, because there's a lot to unpack with the movie. But I think this movie is well renowned amongst the sort of horror community as being one of the tougher watches in horror. Not necessarily because it's a bad film, just because of the subject matter and what actually happens on screen. So I'm going to be very, very interested to see both your guys' take on it.
I'm going to need a bottle of wine just to emotionally prepare myself to watch it.
I think that's probably for the best, to be honest with you. Like, I personally think this is much harder hitting than Eden Lake, and I know a lot of our listeners, you know, were commenting about how tough they found that film at times to watch. Especially, you know, like the ending of that film. But I think this, I personally think this one's a tougher one. But again, like I say, I just would be interested to see what you two guys say about it. It's actually been one that I've been wanting to cover for a long, long time. But I just kind of kept putting it off and kept putting it off, because I think I'd watched it not that long ago when I first considered doing it, and I was like, I'm not fucking watching it again for a while, so now's the time.
Great. a part of me is just like, I am looking forward to watching it. I'm like hoping it's going to be like quite powerful. Then another part of me is like, I just can't wait to get this out of the way so we can just do three kid films in a row.
I know, because we've got Frankenweenie, we've got Hotel Transylvania, and we've got Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark coming on the main show. We've got obviously the Sunday shows sprinkled in between them. Nico's back on the show. We're going to be doing the Midnight Meat Train. Like I say, we've got Candy and Sean coming on next week. We've got a few other people who I've kind of forgotten who's coming on. I'm sorry to those guests. we've still got a whole load more. I'm trying to think of what other movies. We've got the original Night of the Living Dead with David from the House That Screams podcast coming up relatively soon. And I've been sort of planning out guests for April, May, and the beginning of June. So we've got some exciting, some new people coming on the show. We've got some returning guests. It's gonna be fun. Sophie's back on the show next month as well. I can't remember what I said I was gonna do what we're gonna do with Sophie. I'm so bad at this. I've got the fucking schedule right here. We're doing Lake Placid with Sophie. That's gonna be a fun one. Gotta love any movie that's got Betty White in it.
Exactly.
I'm not going to lie, I thought you said Lake Placid there, and I was like, what kind of movie is this?
Story of my life! Lindsay's like, yeah, mine too.
It's fun being single. Lucy, where can people find you online?
You can follow me on Twitter, and you can also find me on Twitch as well. At the moment, I'm streaming Dragon Age Origins in 2, and I'm also playing a new game, which is a spoopy game, which Ian popped into because we both have a shared hatred for the children in this movie, specifically one of them. But it is a good game. It's called A Plague Tale Innocence. It's very emotional. It's about rats during the plague and all these kinds of things. But yeah, lots of RPG games at the moment, so if that's your jam, come join and check us out.
Ian, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at IanForrest12 with 2 R's. I'll post something this week.
Maybe. I'll post the one thing. If you see it, tell us and we'll talk about it next week. Okay. I am everywhere on social media at @HiItsLindsay_. The podcast is all over the internet as well. We are on Twitter at Screams Behind. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Behind the Screams Podcast. We're on TikTok at Behind the Screams Podcast. We're on Twitch at Behind Screens Podcast. Ian, I will fucking find a way to punch you if you don't stop laughing at me.
You say TikTok like an old lady. Like,
I am an old lady.
We're on TikTok. Makes me laugh. You say it like that every time. We're on TikTok.
TikTok. My voice, so to speak. We're on Patreon. If you want to see these pair of silly cunts, you can pay £5.
What did I do?
Sitting there in absolute silence.
You can see them and you can pay £5 to do that, or you can pay £1 for the audio version. At both tiers, you get the audio about a week before everybody else, so it's definitely worth the money. And there's tons and tons and tons of bonus content as well, so definitely do that. If he's got anything else to say for yourselves before we go.
Loads of Twitch streams happening just now.
Yes,
I've been off on Easter holidays from college, so I've been using that opportunity to get a lot of like afternoon streams in. I've started streaming some non-horror stuff, unless, I don't know, maybe Crash Bandicoot is pretty scary for some people. It definitely was rage-inducing for me the other night. But yeah, we've got loads more horror content to come. We're playing things like Dead Space, Phasmophobia. We're still doing, you know, things like Dead by Daylight, and I think we're going to do some Among Us as well, hopefully, coming soon, and a whole host of other stuff as well. We're playing absolute tons of stuff, so there's a whole heap of Twitch streams happening just now, so catch my beautiful mug, like Lindsay did, in on my Twitch channel.
So that's it for us. Thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you next time on Behind the Screens.